Hey everyone, it's a new episode of the Call to Arms podcast. This is episode 2 of our UAAP season 85 preview. You know the deal, our data whiz Ryan Alba is joining us to talk about last year's Final Four teams, and at the end of it we have an exclusive sit down with Ateneo head coach Tab Baldwin talking about his team's quest to avenge a finals loss. I don't think there's anything scarier than Tab Baldwin having a chip on his shoulder heading into a UAAP season. All that exciting stuff is just moments away. The pod is produced and made possible, as always, by the amigo Toby from HR. Original art by the newlywed Alan Martin. And, of course, original theme music is a track called Tropical Vikings by Careless Music Manila. My name is Nico Ramos. Welcome to the Call to Arms podcast.
Something going on around the islands. Money flowing wherever I've been promised. Just another Viking in the tropics. Taking over, trying to stop this novice. Make it killing, I'm finna conquer. I'm a dreamer, the floor is lava. Something going on around the islands.
Let's jump right into it, Ryan. People know the drill by now. Four teams down, four to go. Let's talk about the final four teams of this season. And let's start off with a defending champion, UP Fighting Maroons. We begin in Diliman because, well, you know what? The Maroons waited 36 years to win a championship. And they finally have one, and in true UP misery, they now have the shortest title reign in UAAP history, because they have to defend it, in less than a year's time. Let's talk about your alma mater, Ryan, as, everyone on Twitter always throws at you as if it's an insult, because they say you're biased, and Alba biased, which is, because you are. But I guess let me start out with this. How did UP do it? How did UP win a UAAP championship against, by all accounts, a really, really good Ateneo team?
That's a 2-hour podcast that I'm not willing to go and relive. But
give me the 30-second version of it, unfortunately.
The long and short of it is, like, incredible, like, team defense. They decide to hedge. They decide to, like, make the ball handlers' lives much more difficult. And we saw that with David Defonso. He struggled a bit against Harold Alarcon and James Spencer. And on offense, I mean, we already know what Coach Gold does. Like, he manages to maximize the talents of a roster full of guys who are blue chip recruits, talented scorers, guys who, like, can do a lot of things with the ball in their hand. And he managed to harmonize those talents well. And they're one of the few, the two teams in the league who were in the top three in both offense and defense, the other one being Ateneo. And they had, like, they were very good, and they were, in all honesty, a bit lucky, I guess, because, I mean, the CJ Cancino bank shot, like, and then JD Kagulakan.
You're telling me the CJ Cancino bank shot wasn't on purpose?
I'm not gonna comment on that. And JD Kagulakan just turning into prime Steph Curry in the last minute of the game, like, I mean, like, there was a lot of things that went into that run. A lot of it was because they were very good, and a lot of it was because things went their way. That is, like, how I choose to look at it. And I still believe that, you know, run it again, they still have a great chance of winning it. Kagulangan Miracle 3 or not, like, they deserve the title, and no one's gonna take that away from us. I mean, UP waited for 36 years.
It's an interesting kind of combination of things lining up like a perfect storm at the right time for UP. They started off the season, I think, you know, not to kind of put any words in Coach Gold's mouth. I didn't ask him this. I'm not reporting this. I'm assuming this. Abadiano was supposed to be the lead point guard of this team. At least, you know, that first game was kind of something that was revelatory about UP.
JD Kabulakan has been like pretty underrated going in. Like the guy was the number one recruit in high school. He was an NCAA MVP, led his team to a championship, and then LaSalle happened, and then UP got other high quality guard recruits. But man, the guy can play. The guy can really play. He's one of the smartest guys on both ends of the floor. And I just can't stop raving about him once I get started.
Yeah, and you know, ever since then, it's been kind of like all roses for Kagulan, obviously, after hitting the shot. It's something that now kind of becomes something that you maybe kind of gloss over. But UP, there were times in season 84, did not look good.
Definitely.
This wasn't a championship run that was kind of, oh, you know, clear in a way. UP and Ateneo are going to meet in the finals. There were moments, the Adamson loss, a couple of close games.
The second game immediately against USD, they struggled in the first half. Like, it wasn't a dominating run by any means. They didn't go like 14-0, then trash Ateneo. Like, they clawed their way to the title, and there's a lot, like, you have to respect that much of, like, that much effort, that much struggle going into, like, a historic title. Like, it's definitely one to remember.
Yeah, and then, moving forward in season 85, that roster's coming back pretty close to complete. There's a big Richie Rivero hole, Richie Rivera-shaped hole that UP will not have. But hey, say what you want about Richie. There were times, even in that LaSalle series, in that Ateneo series, when just in terms of the ability to create something, what it is he creates is up for discussion. But you know, that's UAAP basketball for you. It's not always beautiful, but just the ability to create something with 10, 11, 8 seconds left on the shot clock. He's one of the best in the league to be able to do that.
Yeah, and the other thing with Richie is his defense too. Like, he is super athletic at 6'2", knows how to rotate, knows when to rotate, like, gets steals, gets blocks. Like, he's going to be very, very tough to replace, not just on offense. Like, we know the highlight dunks, the Euro steps that don't seem to end, and... But, like, the important thing about him is, like, the offense, if shit doesn't, like, end well, give it to Richie, he'll try to at least get a decent look. Like, that is the biggest thing UP will miss from him on offense. And that is where, last season heading in, UP was looking for a point guard. They found it in Kagulangan. This season, they're looking for a shot creator to give the ball, like, eight seconds left in the shot clock, find a shot, try to make it work. That's the guy they're looking for this season. And there are tons of good candidates. There's Terrence Fortea, who has the same amount of ridiculous confidence that Richie Rivera has. There's Carl Tamayo, who's turning into a 6'8" small forward in the Philippines. And, you know, there's a ton of talent that roster, and it's up to them to find out who that guy is going to be.
The difficult part for the Fighting Maroons as we move forward now to talking about their season 85 after that glorious 84 run is that the target is now on UP's back. They're now wearing the crown.
Whether they like it or not, it's on them.
That's right. There's no surprising anyone anymore, right? This isn't June Manzo and the GDLs and He Who Must Not Be Named, you know, surprising Adamson in the Final Four anymore, right? This is a championship team with, if you want to say, is the best college player in the country.
Nah, I won't say that.
You won't say that Carl Tamayo is the best college basketball player?
There's another guy in Ateneo. Where's number 34?
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say someone else.
I thought you were gonna say
number 24, and I was like, please, again, stop reminding them that Dwight Ramos could have been in Luiga.
No.
I was like, no. All right, but you know, sure, right? Ange, and that's great company to be in, Carl.
Yeah.
By the way,
and there's Xavier Lucero, who was for the first round, in the second place, I think, in the MVP race.
That's right. At one point, was leading the UAP in scoring. But, you know, wala nang gulpe de gulat to para sa UP. They're not going to catch anyone off guard. They're number one on everyone's whiteboard now. And it will, that comes with it its own challenges, right? There's going to be a lot of opportunity for UP to be good because they have a lot of high-level, high-talent players on that roster. If you want to kind of look at a starting five, how much better could you get, right, than Kagulangan at the one? You have a front line. I mean, what a front line of Diouf, Lucero, and if you really want to commit to having Carl at the three, which you probably don't. You probably want to stagger those guys. But, I mean, hey, just thinking of, like, best fives, right? And if you trust James Spencer's shot enough and want to slot him in at that two spot, like, who says no, right? And then you have Abadiano, you have Fortea coming off the bench.
Elenato.
And that's what I want to talk about is some of these new guys for UP. Gallinato, I guess, being the biggest, no pun intended, or maybe pun intended, because he's just a beast.
He's a big boy.
He's a beast of a young man. Is UP more talented in season 85 than they were in season 84? What's the take on that?
I feel like this roster is... I feel like it is more talented. Like, just looking at the names, maybe like in terms of fit, they're missing. Yeah, we've been talking about they're missing the shot creator, but I feel like it is because point guard last season was a bigger hole to fill than a shot creator, especially when you have the talented names that we've talked about. So this season's UP team looks to be better, and so the expectations are much, much higher.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment because it's going to be now a challenge of rising to that expectation, right? Mm-hmm. There's a very, very spoiled fan base now that expects championship runs now to happen each and every season. I guess as a final word on UP, because there's going to be a lot of UP talk moving forward in the season. They're going to be, if not the most talked about team, good or bad, throughout the season. As a final note, what's your... Oh, I mean, let's face it, you're Homer, right? You're Homer. You want UP to win another UAP championship. There, we've said it. Ryan wants him to win another UAP championship. How nervous, excited, calm, frantic, afraid are you about this title defense?
Honestly, like, if you would, like, ask me to bet on it, I wouldn't bet on it. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe I'm a pessimist at the heart, but I feel like...
You?
Yeah, like, I think LaSalle, I would be scared as heck if they face LaSalle again in any series. And the preseason was a bit of a mess at some points. Like, they were losing games that they shouldn't have lost. They were having stagnant offensive halves. Like, I wasn't completely happy with what I was seeing, to be honest with you. And I feel, I mean, there's always Ateneo. There's always Ateneo. I don't think that UP is a convincing favorite at the moment because the other two teams are just as good.
I guess I'll just phrase this question then. Let's say, for example, UP does win, I can't believe I'm saying it, a back-to-back UAAP championship.
Will they be the first one to win two in a year? This is what I want to know.
I mean, I'm probably. Would this title be easier, harder, or just as difficult to win than season 84?
I feel like it'd be harder because I think LaSalle is much better. And Ateneo is always going to be Ateneo as long as there's the other bald guy there.
Yeah. It's funny because later on in the interview with Tab Alder at the end of this episode, he actually refers to Goldwyn as kind of in the same words. Good luck to UP. We're excited about another Carl Tamayo in college year. Lord knows how many we'll see of those left. The fact like, that The fact that we're seeing another one shocks me.
It's a miracle.
Shocks me. I am. Let me tell you how shocked I am that Carl Tamayo is playing another college basketball season in the UAAP. Shocked, I tell you. It is the single most shocking thing that I have experienced this year. Every day I was just waiting for the Carl Silence in Japan, Carl Silence in Japan, Carl Silence in Japan. Carl goes to the U.S. to train, whatever. There's, no, it seems like he's staying and he's going to play for UP one more year. Good luck, UP faithful. Maximize the Carl Tamayo years because you don't know if it's going to be two.
We really don't know.
Dude, if I was Carl, I'd be out of here. But anyway, good luck to the Maroons on the title defense.
Like, if I had one question to ask Goldwyn, how'd you keep Carl here? That is what I want to ask him.
Yeah. What do you have on him? Right? Like, do you have incriminating blackmail material on Carl Tamayo? Why is he still here? But they've kept him. They're running it back with an almost intact championship core. Against a very, very top-heavy UAAP, and also I guess like in a season where parity is maybe something that we can see a better glimpse of this year. Nash Rosella said as much in the interview in the last episode. Good luck, Maroons. Good luck, Maroons. All right, let's pivot over to the FEU Tamaraws. Squeaked into the Final Four last year in true FEU fashion, because that's just, look, this is what FEU does, right? FEU makes Final Fours and they make professional basketball players, good professional basketball players, future national team guys. That's what FEU does year in, year out, no fail. What they will do is they will make the Final Four and they will create superstars seemingly out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Olsen coached the shit out of this team last year. RJ was great, obviously, as a UAAP one and done superstar. I love it. I love that we have one and done college athletes now in the UAAP. Shout out to Swag Daddy, my man, RJ Abarrientos. I love that kid. Good luck to him overseas. But yeah, Olsen, just a masterclass of coaching and maximizing that roster, I felt like, of guys that you maybe look at on paper and you're like, okay, you know, like a slow start for LJ. There's going to be a lot of RJ dependence here. But towards the end of the season, especially in that second half when they turned it on, really just contributions all around and a real solid team and a real disciplined team, is what we saw out of the FEU Tamaraws. What was your take from their season 84?
First, we can talk about them without talking about their backcourt, right? It's RJ and LJ and Cyrus Flores. Like, RJ and LJ, they're, like, if we're looking at them from just a numbers perspective, they're very close to each other in terms of, like, the impact they bring. The only difference is how they do it. RJ's more of a spitfire. He has no conscience, shoot anywhere, anytime. And
I'm not here next year anyway! I'm not gonna be here!
And then there's LJ, who's, like, one of the most athletic guards in the league. Like, big body, strong. Give him a driving lane, let him go downhill, and he's going to lay up or give a kick-out pass to a shooter. And then there's Cyrus Torres, who was probably the best shooter in the UAAP last season.
Easily,
capable of making shots on the move, off the catch, whatever you want. And then there's Emmanuel Ojula, their FSA. He provides a steady force in the middle, and I think he's going to be the guy they're going to miss the most. Not RJ, if we're being honest, it's Ojula. Because, I mean, how are they going to find another guy who can at least check Kwame, check Diouf even a little bit? I think they're replacing him with their old FSA, Chuente.
Yep.
He's the one who was playing in the preseason. And he's not quite as talented, in my opinion.
Yeah, and definitely the motor takes a little bit of a hit because that's what Ojula provided. Yep. And I think that was the most impressive thing about him is just this short-term memory and just a high motor at every possession on both ends of the floor. Like, you know, Kwame would drop a move on him, score on him, and he just wouldn't care. Just go on a full sprint, try to get an early seal on the other end. And that's really kind of the best that you could hope for playing against, in your eyes, the best college player in the Philippines in Ange Kwame. The RJ loss, as you've described it, is going to be the player they miss second most. Yeah. But they are getting a healthy Cholo Añonuevo this season. Cholo hurt his foot last season, and FE was quick to shut that down. Yeah. They were like, nope,
they can't risk it.
Not risking you. Not risking you. Not risking Mr. Cholo Añonuevo, not one bit. He's gone through the full rehab process. Every indication around every conversation around Cholo has been he's good, he's back, he's healthy, as strong, as athletic, as good as to be expected. And even some people around that FEU camp saying maybe the injury was a little bit of a blessing in disguise because it kind of helped his game mature a little bit more, and he's not reliant so much on just that first step and that like the athletic push off. So what are your thoughts on kind of having a talent of that level join this FEU team?
I think Cholo's like the perfect guy to have on your team. Like, he's like a Swiss Army knife. Even back in high school, he's a 6'4" guy, stupid athletic, can do everything on defense, get steals, gets blocks, knows how to rotate. He's long, and he can protect the rim a bit. And he can pass. Like, that's the one thing about him. Like, when he went to the U.S., they were trying to turn him into a point guard, if I recall correctly, and, like, he has the juice for it. Like, he averaged 3.1 assists in, like, 25 minutes per game with the Baby Tams. And in under Coach Carcella's style, like, the ball movement, he'll be a very, very huge help for them. And given that they're missing one of the most, I mean, let's say it, ball dominant, let's say it like that. They're missing one of the most ball dominant guys in the UAP. So there will be touches left to go around. And Cholo's the type of guy who will be able to maximize off of those new opportunities.
I think Cholo, LJ, and Cyrus Torres is flying not that much under the radar because I think you know what you're going to get with them for the most part. But I think we're not talking about that trio a whole lot yet. But after a few games into the season, I think that they're really going to emerge as probably one of the best three-person connections and contributors in the league because consistently, they're going to get touches. Consistently, they're going to get shots. FU will go as far as those three will take them. And if you're relying on a quote-unquote big three, that's not a bad big three to get.
And that's not the thing with it. That's not the end of it with FU. We haven't even talked about the best player in their preseason build-up so far. It's been Royce Alfort.
Right.
He struggled a bit last season. Like, he didn't really shoot the ball well. And he was playing behind RJ and LJ, but like with RJ living his best life in Korea, Royce is gonna eat. He's a do everything point guard. He can rebound the ball, bring the ball down immediately, distribute well, defend well. He's a very good defender. And he'll just be like one more guy, one more tool for FU to have to like break one of the top three teams' hearts at some point in the season.
You know, Royce Alfarque is who exactly I'm talking about as guys that you maybe not really think about too much in the UAAP. And he's going to have like a 12-year PBA career, plays on Gilas, and is just going to be like an absolute superstar. We didn't really pay that much attention to RR Pogoy when he was with FEU, and look at who he is now.
I mean, to be fair though, Mac Belho was catching a ton of like attention back then.
Right. No, exactly. Right. And that's kind of like the Alforque situation, right? Everyone's going to have their eyes on everybody else. And it's going to be a prime opportunity for, I think is really going to take advantage of a lot of second units. a lot of these teams that don't have that bench depth and don't have that tough guard coming off the... Not everyone has Jerry Abadiano coming off the bench as your second point guard. And if you don't, guess what? Royce Alforque is just going to massacre you and your entire second unit. Good luck, FEU. The question with them, are they keeping their Final Four spot? I think is the most basic, but at the same time, most intriguing question around the Tamaraws.
Yeah. They've like made 8 straight, if my math is right.
That's what they do. That's what they do.
Yeah. But like, I want to look stupid right now and say they won't.
Uh-oh.
But like, knowing full well that they will find their way back in there somehow, I'm going to say they won't, and I will be glad to be wrong at the end of the season.
That's a nice way to put it. You can pass by Moraita again. It was close there. You almost lost your Moraita pass, but you got it back. Let's see if you can go to Taft. As we talk about the De La Salle Green Archers. Should we say that the De La Salle Green Archers were 3 minutes away from a finals berth before Carl Tamayo started taking personally all of these Balti Baltazar has Carl's number murmurs that he was hearing around Mall of Asia
Arena.
I feel
like he saw the TikTok before the game.
First of all, everybody should have seen the TikTok. They should have done something about the TikTok before the game started. But I think that that's where the LaSalle season obviously ends, but that's also where it starts when we talk about their season 84. Right, not the best start for LaSalle. They peaked towards the end of that elimination round. They beat UP in the first game to force the rubber match, and they thoroughly outplayed UP for 6, maybe 7 of those 8 quarters. In a convincing way, I felt. I felt like they were the more physical. I felt that they were the more decisive. They were the more efficient team.
For UB.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you think that the LaSalle, if you think that the UP front line is impressive, well, congratulations. Because we have Mike Phillips, we have Bright Nwankwo, and Balti Baltazar for LaSalle in season 84. They were the perfect match. And to be honest, it took Carl Tamayo having to have a King Maroon moment for LaSalle to not have a dream Ateneo LaSalle finals. And that hurts if you're a Green Archer fan. You look back on it and you're like, crap, because you know what? Beatable pala yung Ateneo. It's possible to beat them.
They
in
could
the
have
finals.
Done it. They were there.
Maybe that could have been us. Yeah. They get Shawnee Winston back. I did not expect Shawnee Winston to play out his next year of eligibility. That's great for them. Another year of Evan Nelly, because you pronounce his last name differently every time.
I'm not going to try.
Another year to try and figure out who Mark Nonoy is in this system. You lose Balti Baltazar, but Mike Phillips is a top-tier big man in the UAAP, and it's a tier that's occupied by very, very few people. Him
and then like they have another guy,
probably Carl. That Kimbao kid. You lose Balti, you get Kevin Kimbao. An embarrassment of riches at that 4 spot for.
And then
for
there's Raven Cortez, who is at that level of prospect, if not for the injuries.
Right. So what are your thoughts on DLSU moving forward here in season 85?
I feel like they're in the same tier as Ateneo and UP, and they are the perfect fall for UP. Like, I would say that put 10 good teams, like if UP and LaSalle face the same 10 good teams, UP is going to beat those 10 good teams more often than LaSalle. But if you put them together, like, I don't know who's going to win.
Right.
Like, I don't know if you got the point I was trying to make, but UP is a better team in, like, a vacuum because of, like, the roster construction, LaSalle's lack of shooting, and their offense not being actually good. It's going to hurt them a lot in close games. But against UP, it's just, like, the perfect combination of length and talent to give UP help.
And it's going to be super interesting to think about this UP team going up against LaSalle, because you feel like there's an inevitability, right? Pick your poison among those top three teams, because they're clearly the top three teams, Ateneo, LaSalle, and UP. UP had to go through, well, I guess, probably the toughest route to a championship in season 84, because you have to beat LaSalle twice, and you have to beat Ateneo two times out of... you have to beat LaSalle once in two games, and Ateneo two out of three times. And as you said, this championship, if it's for UP to win, would be tougher than last year's ringer that they went through. And a lot of it is because of how much LaSalle improved. And yep. because of it, a lot of it is because of how good this LaSalle team is. The one thing about Derek Pumaren, and the Pumaren press gets thrown around way too much, in my opinion. And, you know, it's a full-court press. Like, every UAP team has a full-court press.
They all do it.
And Manong Derek actually does it a little less than he used to, historically, than when he did back in the heyday of the Franz and Dindo Pumaren press days. But the thing about him as a head coach is he runs a pro team. He runs a professional basketball team made up of college players playing in a college league. That is my impression of Coach Derek Pumaren. The play sets they call, they're PBA stuff. The Balti post ups and clear outs, you can squint your eyes and think, did San Miguel just do that for Junmar? It's also the reason why there's a big mystery around what Mark Nonoy is in the system, because there's not a lot of Mark Nonoy's in the PBA, and Mark Nonoy's game at this point isn't at a pro system fit. But yeah, I mean, they are a very professional team with the playsets that they run and the demeanor and the rotation expectations and the minutes expectations that those players have for themselves and within that team. If you're playing a Derek Pumaren team, you're playing a professional team.
Like, the thing with LaSalle is that system the best for them offensively is what I've been, like, trying to go back on. Because Kevin Kiambao is a singular talent. But can they maximize him with, like, the lack of shooters they have, with the type of sets that they run? That is something I'm not really 100% sold on. The thing with LaSalle is their defense is incredible. Like, they're either them or Anshkwame. Not Ateneo, just Anshkwame. They're either the best defense in the league, one of those two. But their offense is what constantly lets them down. Like, I've checked in the preseason, all of their losses, they shot under 25% from three. And that, so in close games, when they need their offense most, that is the problem. They don't really, they don't get much of it when they need it.
And that's my question mark to LaSalle, is that three spot, that wing spot, before we even get to the bench, right? Because as a starting five, you can't really wish for that much better than Evan, Shawnee Winston, Kiambao, and Mike Phillips, right? I mean, four out of five starters, most UAAP teams would sell their main building for those four out of five starters. But most UAAP teams don't have championship aspirations, and that's what LaSalle has. And if you have championship aspirations, you need, especially in season 85, in 2022 UAAP, you need to have no holes in terms of elite talent. Not good talent, not so-so talent. You need to have elite talent at every spot of your starting, or especially your closing five. That's what we saw with UP. That's what we saw with Ateneo last season. That's what we expect out of UP. That's what we expect out of Ateneo. We'll talk about them in a second. Who is that second wing player? Who's that three guy for LaSalle? And how well can that three guy shoot from three? Because that's what they need him to do. I've been hearing a lot of people are all up in my DMs going like, how dare you ask that question? CJ Austria is obviously that guy. A lot of people saying that Joaquin Manuel has been and will continue to be that guy for La Salle. And my pushback to that is there's nothing I wish for more than for CJ and or Joaquin to be those dead shot shooters, 3&Ds for La Salle. They have to show us. Yep. They just have to show us because they haven't yet. Not at the level La Salle needs for them for La Salle to win a championship against Ateneo and UP.
Exactly. They really have like a bunch of guys who could be it. Like Joaquin had like a ton of one or two insane games back in last season, and CJ Ostra, he's the closest guy. If we're being honest, if you're gonna bet on it right now, it's the safest bet to think it's him. But the thing is one enough? Two enough? That is really the tough question with them. Is like, do they have enough shooters? They don't need just one. They need guys who, I mean, if they have shooters, imagine what the Phillips brothers can do underneath.
Right.
What Kemba can do underneath. Imagine what a clear lane can do for Mark Nonoy, who's been struggling without the shooters that he had with USD. Like, that's the big question with them is, do they have enough to make it work? Because, fine, let's say CJ Austria ends up being that guy. Let's say Joaquin Manuel ends up being that guy too. Would that be enough? Would it, like, they were a bottom, not bottom tier is too much. They were a below average offense last season. And one or two extra pieces isn't the difference between them being below average to being an elite offense.
It helps that you have an offensive genius in Kevin Kimbao join you. So that's definitely going to help. But yeah, you hit it right on the head. Their outside shooting, their three-point shooting is definitely going to be, I think, a very, very clear marker as the points towards wins or losses. Yeah. For La Salle, I think it could come down on most days to if they shoot the ball well, they'll win. If they don't shoot the ball well, it depends who they're playing. They'll either not win or kind of not be so proud of the win that they're able to put together. Look back at the game versus UE last season. What are the chances we see Nelly, Nonoy, and Shawnee just, you know, Coach Derek just kind of like fold up his cards and go, I'll just go with my five best players here and throw those three guards out there with Kiambao and Phillips?
I do that. Like, put Nonoy, Nelly, and Winston, like, what are you going to do about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, post them the hell up is what you're going to do about that. But
I mean, like, have you seen Phillips' arms, like those go for days.
Yeah, no, and that's their safety net, right? No. How much he's able to cover for Nelly, for Winston. Nono is a high level defender, but you know those three together gives up a lot of size. You give up a lot of your strength, which was that front court. So how much Phillips is able to cover for them? Look, I don't want a LaSalle fan listening to this and going, piay naman, oh. Like, all you guys have are, like, questions about LaSalle, questions about LaSalle. No, this is actually our convoluted way of complimenting LaSalle because I think it is championship season for the De La Salle Green Archers. They are in the hunt for a UAAP championship. And when those are your standards, it's not about talking about what you do well. It's now about nitpicking what maybe could be your weakness.
Mm-hmm. Like, the thing with La Salle is their defense will be enough to give them most of the wins that they need. But to like, you know, to get to the higher level, they need more than just their length. Because, like, we can, like, sit here and talk about how they have the best front court depth probably in the history of the UAAP with, like, they have Phillips, then they have Phillips, and then they have
Duanco.
Duanco, who will probably start these guys would start on probably every other team. Like, if we want to, like, just talk about their good, there's a ton of good.
Yeah, there's more than enough good. Okay. It's about now trying to turn that good into a UAAP championship.
Yep.
And I think, as we transition into Ateneo, I think that the crucial part is there are no games that you can lose. Because who drops to the third seed between UP, Ateneo, and La Salle could have a championship season go away because of the format.
Yep.
And that's just the truth of it, right? You could put yourself at a very distinct disadvantage that a loss to Adamson, a careless loss to NU, not being able to split with Ateneo or UP. And, you know, I say this about, or with LaSalle, among all those three teams, right? Could turn what could possibly be, you know, the multiverse could have you winning the championship 99 times, but that one time, because you had a game get away from you, you fall to the 3 seed, yep. And now all of a sudden you get knocked out because of the format, because you just made it too hard on yourself. So LaSalle, hoping for championship. I think that's the clear in a way goal for them. The LaSallians should be very, very excited. All right, let's talk about the Ateneo Blue Eagles. We saved them for last because it's a conversation with Tab Baldwin that we have lined up. Yeah, it's always a learning experience talking to these head coaches. I enjoy talking to Nash. I enjoy talking to Tab. Let's talk Ateneo. They lose in the finals, which was a reminder to us that oh nga pala, pwede nga pala mangyari yan. Yeah, we forgot that could happen. They also lose Gian Mamuyak, they lose Tyler Tio, and they unexpectedly lose SJ Belangel, who is not just one of the best point guards in the country, hard stop, but probably the best point guard for Eto Sana, this season 85 team of the Blue Eagles. They have a hole at that point guard spot. BJ Andrade could have left. He's coming back. There's a lot of Blue Eagle Bebop DNA, and Tab talks about it in the interview in a moment, that they're really trying to preserve as much of it as they can. It's like the DNA that caused Jurassic Park to make the dinosaurs. It's in dire supply right now. So they're happy Andrade comes back. Also, the outside shooting of BJ Andrade is something that any UAP team would love to have. You know how much LaSalle would pay right now to have BJ Andrade solve all of their problems just to be their shooter? Chris Kuhn and Dave Ildefonso is an enviable kind of small forward rotation that any team would just kind of like absolutely bribe their way into having. And then you have Ange Kwame, not 100% healthy. Tab says so as much in the interview. How healthy is he? How close to MVP form can he get at the midway point of the season and beyond is a big question mark. Those are the guys coming back for Ateneo. Let's just stick to the guys coming back for Ateneo right now. The two Chus, Gio Chu and Chu Daves, also in the roster still for Ateneo. Your thoughts on the core that they're bringing back from that finals loss?
I mean, it all starts with, like, Ange and Dave are both, like, probably top one at their position. So let's not act like Ateneo's in poverty mode or whatever. Like, Ateneo is still full of, like, elite talent. Like, sure, they're not. They're losing a lot of talent. But it just speaks a lot about the program that even after that loss, they're still in these talks that they're, you know, in the running for a championship. Like, and I want to get in a bit about Ange Kwame because I have, like, a take.
Okay, uh-oh.
I think Ange Kwame is the best 4-2 in the athlete of all time. Like, I'm sorry.
That's not that spicy.
I mean, there are a lot of hardcore. Benambala scores, like, 30 or whatever, and, like, therefore he is the best takes out there, but like Ange Kwame, he does so much for Ateneo. Like, I'm not that worried. That's why, as soon as I heard like SJ and the rest were leaving, like, not that worried. I'm just still there.
Yeah, he solves a lot of problems.
I think
for
to illustrate what he brings to Ateneo is, remember the Chibuze Ikeled defenses?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were a plus 11 without Ange Kwame, and the next season, plus 11 is like elite NBA championship level tier.
Right.
Like in terms of net rating. Like the next season, Ange Kwame comes in the roster is generally the same. The biggest difference in terms of minutes is just Ange, and they become a plus 21 all of a sudden. And plus 21 is unheard of in the NBA or in any other professional league. Like, Ange Kwame just took an elite team into an insane stratosphere.
Oh, we were there. Yeah, we were there.
Yeah,
we were there.
Seasons.
We were there making sandwiches in the middle of Ateneo games. Yeah. And I'm not talking about, like, me watching from home. I'm talking about me on the sideline commentating this game with a sandwich in my hand going, yep, I know what's going to happen here.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. Oh, Ateneo's down by 5 now. Better, like, start preparing my lunch because, like, they're going to be up by 20 in, like, a few minutes.
So let's talk about the new guys. Let's talk about the new guys for Ateneo.
Wait, before I miss it, like, Josh Lazar, we haven't talked about him.
Sorry. I wanted to save him for last, but we could talk about Josh Lazar now because I have a spot in my heart that is shaped according to Josh Lazar's silhouette.
Like, among the holdovers from last season, he's the guy who I'm most excited to see because he just reminds me of, like, the Will Navarro type. Like, Tap always has, like, one of those plus minus kings, little thing kings. Like, and Josh Lazar is up next. And the thing with him is, he's improved, like, offensively too. Like, in the preseason, he was, like, shooting turnaround Jays, like, making pull-up, like, one or two pull-up jumpers, and I think he's ready to make a leap. And he's probably the biggest candidate to fill in for the losses that they've incurred.
Yeah, I'm such a Josh Lazar fan because of, as you mentioned, the little decisions he makes on court. You could really tell it comes from just a natural instinct that you can't teach, right? The way he positions himself on box outs, the way that he's able to kind of shift his body when he sets screens. Josh Lazar setting screens has been one of, like, my tiny joys watching Ateneo play last year, and I think it allowed SJ to get downhill a whole lot more than he would have if it was someone else setting those screens. And you're right, Ateneo has a history of that kind of player, whether it's Will Navarro, whether it's Rafi Verano, who I feel Ateneo is going to miss a whole lot more than people might expect. Because he was also a high IQ guy that solved a lot of problems for Ateneo, especially on the defensive end. And when he was making shots, especially in the postseason, I think that was such a welcome sight for Ateneans. But yeah, Josh Lazaro, he's going to be a UAP star. I truly believe that. The question for Lazaro, and I guess the one thing that's keeping Lazaro from putting up the numbers he is most certainly capable of doing is, in true Ateneo fashion, the rotation, because he is going to be competing 4 minutes against a very, very tough group of other players, most notably Kai Balongay, who we can talk about right now as he headlines this new crop of Ateneo players that are joining for season 85. How good is he? How good is he not? Everyone is talking about him like he's the next arrival of Dwight Ramos. Sorry, Ateneans, to remind you that Dwight Ramos could have played for you. But yeah, who is Kai Balongay? What's his game? How good is he? And is he going to make all of these Ateneo anxieties go away?
Kai. Like, he is their answer to the 6'6", 6'7", big craze in the UAP. LaSalle has Giambao and Phillips. UP has Carl Tamayo and Ateneo. They have Kai Balongay now. Like, the thing with him is he's incredibly complete on both ends of the floor. Like, watching him in the WUBS, like, he was drilling threes. He was, like, making post turnarounds and then he was, like, finishing off of alley-oops and transition. Like, he's such a weapon for a guy like Tab Baldwin to have. Like, he is on offense, like, he showed everything. Like, there doesn't seem like anything that he can't do on the floor, which makes, you know, life that much easier for Baldwin, because he can put him in situations where he can just finish. You know what I mean? Like, it's not hard to coach a guy like Kai Balong on offense. Their Ateneo's first play of the game every time was a pair of screens to get Kai Balungay downhill for an alley-oop, and it worked every time in the WBS. They did that like twice in one game at the start of both halves, and then they did it the next game and it still worked. Like, that's the type of thing that he's an incredible weapon for a coach of his caliber to have. And that's what makes him going to Ateneo so dangerous for the other teams.
And we expect him to be good immediately. This isn't one of those, oh, maybe he'll have to adjust the UAAP style of play. UAAP style of play is going to adjust to Kai Balungay. We think this is a man among boys situation. Tab, he'll detail this in an interview, though. You know, and I believe him when he says that he sees his team as underdogs this season, as opposed to kind of, I guess, how they were viewed as the mighty, untouchable, plus 21 Ateneo Blue Eagles of the past. And he says that mostly because of how good he thinks UP and LaSalle are. And we've gone on record just a few minutes ago talking about how good we think LaSalle is, how good we think UP is. Tab, in so many words, feels like in that race, UP and LaSalle have maybe caught up with them, or that they've maybe taken a slight step back, which makes for this three-team sprint at the top for those two twice-to-beat spots very, very interesting, because I don't think that Tab is penciling in Ateneo as a twice-to-beat team so far. Those games have to be played and those wins have to be won.
You know what annoys me about that a bit? Is that Ateneo was still a plus 18 team last season. They were still by far the best offensive and defensive team, finals loss included. And they're keeping their two best players. Like, sure, Dave disappointed in the finals, but all throughout the season, he was Ateneo's second best player. And Ange Kwame is still far and away the best player in the league. And I will not assume otherwise until I see him play again and that he's been, like, limited because of the injury. So, like, Ateneo is, like, they're not dead at all.
I don't think anyone is proclaiming death upon Ateneo. I think Tab just has a much more realistic view of...
I feel like Tab is very pessimistic, and I feel like just he as a person, having a chip on his shoulder.
But he says as much in the interview. And I think though it's important to kind of again contextualize his pessimism, and I made sure that I kind of made that clear when I spoke to him, to have him really explain it thoroughly. I don't think by any means he thinks he's coaching a bad team. I think he's just wary now of UP and of LaSalle. Yeah. Especially his team just failed to win a championship, and you know, quite frankly, had a winnable game, very winnable game in game three, slip from their hands, due to, you know, not necessarily a failure on their end, but you know, they got outplayed, which doesn't happen often. And I think he's wary that, hey, I don't want this to become a new reality. I don't want us to be outplayed, because guess what? Ateneo, UP, and LaSalle, talent for talent, all have the same zip code now.
Yep. And that is like the fun thing about the UAP. Like, the top tier teams are like so tightly locked that there's no legitimate favorite to start the season. And like, the other teams are also very, very good and could ruin someone's day. Like, that's why like season 85 is one of the most exciting seasons. And
season 85 of the UAP is what F1 strives to be. It's what F1 strives to be, where you have the top teams seemingly able to win any race any given weekend, and then the midfield just so tight with each other, battling it out for those four and five spots. And I think that that's what we're gonna get in season 85, and it's incredibly I'm just incredibly happy that it's so close.
Yep.
All right, Ateneo will still be good. We're saying that for the record here, ladies and gentlemen. All right, no one's saying that Ateneo is, maybe they'll miss the Final Four. Nope, that's not going to happen. However, as you said earlier, am I willing to bet which two teams get the twice-to-beat advantage? Hell no.
No. Nope. Not wasting my money. Nope.
No, there is no way I'm slotting in, not even just one team, in those two slots, because any Ateneo LaSalle, Ateneo UP, and UP LaSalle game, any of those, I don't care how much the scalper is charging you, buy it. Yep. Watch those games. They're going to be at a super high level. And then NU is going to come in one Wednesday morning and beat one of these three teams and yep. act like it's nothing special.
Just going to drop 30 for no reason.
Yeah, exactly. Ryan, any other thoughts, not just on these four teams that we talked about, but on the season in general? You already expressed how exciting the season is, how parity, although not league-wide, but I guess between two sets of three teams is super strong, which is, I guess, the best that we could ask for. Any other thoughts from you, sir?
I just want to, like, a little bit of warning, because, like, people tend to get carried away by things. Like, the format of the UAAP is so short that there is no actual definitive best team even after a season. Like, because, like...
The sample size is so small, you're saying, that the data isn't enough to conclusively, with confidence and accuracy, determine anything. It's really kind of leading you to a best guess.
So, like, just enjoy it. Just pretty much just enjoy it instead of, like, you know what I mean? Because, like, every team was... The top three teams, they were like moments away from a different outcome. Like, one little change could have, like, led to so many different narratives that I feel like it would be just best to enjoy it for what it is, which is pure fun basketball. And that's what we're gonna get this season, and, you know, just have fun.
I'll tell you that. I'll remind you of your own advice the next time your team tries to spam Carl Tamayo post-ups in a deciding game and you're pissed off as all hell. I'll remind you, hey, Ryan, just enjoy it. Just enjoy it.
Like,
they forgot to run pick and roll. Just enjoy it. Just enjoy it.
I am the biggest hypocrite, pretty much.
Yeah, that's why you're on this podcast. That is our data and analytics and film and Twitter whiz, Ryan Alba, joining us for the preview. Here is now our conversation with Ateneo head coach Tab Baldwin. A friend of the pod and a friend of mine dearly that I'm so happy that I get to talk to again. I'm so happy that I'll be able to see again a whole lot of in the next coming weeks is Coach Tab, Sir Tab Baldwin, OBE. I did say that I would always address you as Sir. Coach Tab, thanks for making time. I know you're a busy man.
It's great to be with you again, Nikos. Wish it was in the studio with you or wherever you're at. It's been a long time since we've shook hands and had a good chat.
Yeah, no, the last UAP season, we saw each other, quote-unquote, with me being in the broadcast booth and you being on the bench. But that was a very business-like situation. All we could do was really kind of wave at each other. So I'm really, really looking forward to season 85 when, you know, I can actually come up to you and you know, give you a hug, welcome back the season, and, you know, really make sure that there's that connection again between the broadcast team, the players, the coaches. It's just something I didn't realize how much I would miss.
Well, I think all of humanity misses that more than they realize, and I think we're worse off because of it. So I think we all need to get back to, you know, life as pre-pandemic normal and understand the importance of human interaction and how much health that brings us, psychological and I think physical too.
Now, a lot of people, I'm sure, are ringing up your phone the last year or so trying to get you to talk, but it seems like they don't get you to talk about what you do for a living and what your primary charge is, which is head coach of the Ateneo de Manila Blue Eagles. So that's what I'm going to talk to you about. No other way to put this, Coach Tab, but a disappointing end to your season 84, losing in the finals. And what a way to lose. I'm sure there's a better way I could phrase that, but I'm sure that still stings, right? But a very competitive high level three games. As fans, we enjoyed it. I'm so sorry. We enjoyed watching it. But heading into season 85 with such a short off season, is that something you've welcomed, this short turnaround, because you get the quickest opportunity to get back into chasing back what you lost, which is the UAAP title?
No, I don't welcome it at all. And, you know, looking back to the end of last season, you know, I'm sure that my players are hugely disappointed. But for me, I think I was, you know, part of something special. I think that that final series was extraordinary. And I don't feel anything other than, you know, sort of gratitude toward UP and what they brought to the finals. And, you know, sure, we would rather win it, you know, and I would rather have been on the winning side. But I think to be a part of something that is historical in nature, and not because UP won it and you know, recorded a historical moment for their university, but because of the magnitude of the occasion and because of coming out of pandemic and the excitement that it brought back to basketball, I look back with fondness on it. Could have ended better, but
right,
really look at it that way. I'm just feel very blessed to have been a part of it. Looking ahead, no, I don't like the short turnaround because I've always been a big preparation guy. And with the short turnaround, this team, which has so many new players in it, it needs more preparation time. And I think our play in the preseason right now reflects that. We don't look very good in my eyes. And we need more preparation. We need more preparation games. And we're not going to get them. So, you know, it's time to buckle up and really prepare for the fight. And we have to make it not one big fight, but 14 big fights in order to get to the one big fight. So I think that's the way we have to look at it. There's not going to be any cruising through. We're not going to look cool. We're not going to, you know, wow anybody, I don't believe, this season.
Now, Coach Tab, you know, I'm always fair with you. You know, I'm always honest with you. And I know that you like being held accountable. Someone might hear that, a UAAP fan might hear that and say, well, you know, Coach Tab, during your championship runs, you would be 8-0, you would go 9-0 midway through the season, and you'd say something similar in the sense that, in my eyes, we're still figuring things out, we're still not as good as we can be, but the result on paper would still be wins. Could you just maybe clarify for someone who might have heard you say something similar before and hear you now, can you just maybe clarify the distinction between those two categorizations of your teams?
Yeah, and that's a very accurate question because as a coach, I am a perfectionist. So they never really rise to the standard of satisfying me. So the difference is, you know, a team that can perform well and that I believe can perform well, but hasn't met a standard of excellence, to a team now that is certainly still trying to find itself, and a coaching staff that's working really hard right now just to get us to a level of performance that we believe other UAAP teams will be at. We may be wrong. You know, maybe everybody is suffering from the short turnaround in the same way. But, you know, and I mentioned this before we went on air, that in our game last Saturday against Adamson, we were very much the poorer cousin in that game. Mm. Adamson looked pretty good, pretty sharp, and beat us pretty handily. And we looked, to use an old cricketing term, we looked at sixes and sevens. You know, we really knew where we were at out there on the floor. And that is a little bit unusual because I think we looked okay over in Japan when we played over there in the university tournament. When we were in Israel, we looked okay. But there was something about a UAAP side in Adamson that brought out the worst in us.
Wow.
And, you know, we have to figure that out because the important games are going to be against the UAAP sides. The intensity they bring, the fever pitch, the crowd, you know, all of these factors, which the other preseason games that maybe gave us a little bit of a false sense of security didn't bring. So we're looking forward to it. But, you know, we have to sharpen up a lot, I think.
It's so funny that you mentioned Adamson. Last night I was just talking to Coach Nash Rosella, who was in the part one of the UAP preview, and he had just said that while he believes your team and UP and maybe LaSalle are, you know, on a tier that's on their own, he also believes that this season 85 might be a season where we're going to see the most parity in the UAP that we've seen in a while. You know, I asked him, I was like, would you agree? It doesn't seem like there's a 0-14, 1-13 team this year. And he said, essentially, if you're not careful, any team could beat you. Is that your estimation when you look at the field? You know, not just because you're a perfectionist, not just because you're extremely respectful of your peers and other UAAP teams, but just from a talent and execution level, and I guess the X factor of a short preparation, do you see that on any given day, you know, anyone could beat anyone in this coming season?
Yeah, I would go one step further. I would say even if you are careful.
Oh, wow.
You still, you know, might run into a buzzsaw on any day. You know, teams like, you know, that are perennial fighters for playoff positions like FEU, Adamson, and NU in particular, those three teams are very capable of finishing in the top two if things fall right and they have a strong season. Coach Nash is right. There is more parity, and I think you know, UE and UST probably still have to prove themselves coming into the season. But again, you know, take them lightly and you might find that they have proven themselves to you on any given day. But what I really like about the UAAP right now is I like the quality of coaching. I really do. And I think it's a very high standard. And we're going to see how that impacts games. I don't want to go too much further on it because the fans all know who the coaches are.
Right.
And they know that these are coaches of reputation before this season starts. So they're going to be forced in the season, and it's a short season. You know, 14 games is not a long time to play out, you know, who the strongest team is. You have to be ready every game or you find yourself tagged with 2, 3, 4 losses, and then you're fighting for what you don't expect to be fighting for.
Yeah, and you know, especially given the schedule, right? All teams play on Wednesdays, and then you just pick whether you're playing Saturday. That's a short turnaround, but if you play Sunday, that's just an extra 24 hours, and you know, it's not really that much of a relief for you. When people look at, you know, your team now, I think, and it's something that, you know, they've deserved, because of the service that they've done to your university and to your program. But when people look at your team, it's difficult not to kind of think of the guys that won't be suiting up, that won't be wearing that Ateneo blue in season 85, right? Mamu, SJ, you know, those guys that were really leaders for you. I remember having specific conversations with you about those two young men in particular, SJ and Mamu, how you were so proud that they became leaders. It's almost as if you don't really talk about their skill because that's so obvious. But that leadership void that you're trying to fill, is that something that you're concerned about, or has there been others that have stepped up to that role to take over for SJ and Mamu as leaders of this team?
Well, you hit the nail right on the head. And that's probably a cliche-ish thing to say in a lot of interviews, but we started our preseason back in June identifying that as our number one priority. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it stemmed from the fact that, you know, it was the unexpected departure of SJ Bellingel. We really were counting on him to step into the leadership role this season, both from an on-court standpoint with having the ball in his hands a lot, as well as a maturity standpoint and off-court, and that's just the kind of kid he is. But you're right. We lost, you know, not just SJ and Mamu, but also Tyler T, you know, another leader on court and off court. Rafi Varano, another leader, you know, on court and off court. So it did create a void, but we do have players, and certainly BJ Andrade, who is, you know, sat on the sidelines, and it looked like he was going to leave as well, but now he turned around and stayed. So, you know, he has stepped into the captaincy role, but it isn't easy because of so many new players. And one of the things about our program is we have an inherent leader in terms of culture. And with so many leaders, cultural leaders in our team leaving, we didn't get the flow on cultural effect. So we are going through the process now of a leadership group of players, which includes Anj Kwame, Jacob Lau, Sean Katavis, BJ, of course, Davil DeFonso. These guys carrying the leadership mantle as a group to reaffirm what it means to be BBOB, what it means to be a Blue Eagle. And I think that process is far from complete, and it is extremely critical that we make great strides in that as we approach the season, because we're not going to go out on a talent basis, on a preparation basis, and beat teams. We're going to have to dig deep and find something extra that I think every team tries to build within itself, but we have had a history of that which we want to be able to rely on. And so it is this group of players now that, along with the coaching staff, that are trying to build this inherent, I guess, plus in our environment that at some time can give us a few points when we need them.
Now, you mentioned a couple of players there that I want to talk about. Ange, the reigning UAAP MVP, I think is number one with a bullet in terms of the question marks that people like me have around Ateneo, people like me who are big fans of Ange. There is a time, Coach, when you hear the letters ACL and, you know, you lift up every prayer that you have and you're like, maybe we'll see him in a year and a half. Ange hurts his ACL, goes through rehab, recovery, all that stuff, says he's on track to be ready for season 85. I'm assuming you expect him to be at tip-off for you on your opening game. Where would you, you know, share with us what you can, but where would you track his recovery from MVP form to wherever it is he might be right now, or maybe he's already there?
Well, he's somewhere south of MVP form, you know, how far, you know, he needs binoculars to see it. That's for sure. You know, he isn't that close. He missed 2 months, and he's a big guy. You know, his the long levers in the body don't heal. Well, maybe they heal, but getting back the coordination, the agility, the mobility, which is such a big part, the quickness, which is such a big part of Anja's game, hasn't come all the way back yet. The desire is there. The heart is there. And those are important factors for him. But yeah, he isn't the player that he was at the end of last season. And to be perfectly honest, that knee was a mess. It wasn't just the ACL. Fortunately, it was only a partial tear. And the doctors decided, Doc Canlis, you know, who's as good as there is when it comes to ACLs, decided that rehabilitation was the better pathway than surgery. If he had had surgery, we would have lost him for the season. But it wasn't just the ACL. There was an MCL in there. There was, you know, some cartilage damage. There was some clicking in the knee. So all of that required specific rehabilitation and a lot of movement rehabilitation, which they took all the high impact stuff out. So he was really learning how to jump off of one leg correctly,
right,
for a long time. So Saturday against Adamson, he was a shadow of himself, which we have seen that in practice at times. Yesterday against LG, the Korean team, he looked like the old Ange, and that was with only one rest. So that was really encouraging. But again, last night in practice, he was a little bit slow. So, you know, I'm not sure what the exact triggers are for him right now to get him hitting on all cylinders. But he's certainly going to start for us. He's certainly going to play the season as long as his knees hold up. And, you know, we're excited about him having his last season with us and making that a great way to go out.
And you know, I think that every UAAP fan, just because of not just the player that he is, he's a great player, he's an MVP, obviously, but just because of the young man that Ange Kwame is, not to mention the service he's put in with the national team, he's everyone's crowd favorite. And, you know, we wish him nothing but the best, and we wish to see the MVP form of Ange Kwame and then some here this season. You have a couple of new names on your team. New super talented players are a blessing and a curse in the UAAP, because especially with a short off season, you want to have some time to integrate them, not just into your basketball culture, but into your university culture, right? Bebop is much more than just basketball. Kai Balungay has been on every headline because of the ability that he brings to this Ateneo team, and I think a lot of people are very excited, very intrigued, very eager to see him playing for you in your system. How would you characterize him as a player? And how would you characterize him as a Blue Eagle in terms of how he fits with the rest of your team?
Kai is a real talent, no question about that. You know, he's a big 6'6", pushing 6'7". He's a high flyer. You know, he's a great athlete. He can play above the rim. He can shoot the ball from the 3-point line. So he brings a lot of offensive talents, a lot of athleticism. He's good around the basket. He's a good rebounder. He's got a good nose for the ball. Gets up and down the floor really fast. So, you know, we're expecting that he will be, you know, a performer that will get significant minutes this year. But, you know, you highlight an important facet of what it means to be in our program and play in our program, and that is the adaptation period that particularly the Phil Ams or the Phil Foreigners go through, you know, that don't grow up playing basketball here, that don't grow up in the UAAP high school competition, that don't grow up in Ateneo University. Mm. There is an adjustment period. It does take time. And I think that, unfortunately, for him and for, you know, players like Paul Garcia, they haven't, you know, had enough time in our program because of the abbreviated preparation time, really for 3 years now.
Right.
Preparation time for season 85 was season 84.
Right.
That's that time, and their preparation time for 84 was pandemic.
And you lose half your rotation from 84 heading into 85.
So he doesn't have the leaders built into the team who are helping him make all the adjustments, nor do the other players who might have been in the program but weren't playing minutes. Mm. For us, players like Gab Gomez, Sean Katavis, there's more. You know, Gio Chu played limited minutes. Forski Padrigal played limited minutes. You know, and these guys are going to have to step up and play big minutes this year. So there are, you know, I mean, anybody that says there's a lot of question marks over our program, it's true. Doesn't matter. We got to go out and play the game, and we've got to go out and be our best if we expect to succeed. But it is true that the question marks are there, and they are real.
Now, we mentioned earlier that we did split the preview into two episodes, and I asked this question to Coach Nash about the three other teams that shared his team's fate last season, which was on the outside looking in. You had already touched on them, you know, specific to Adamson and NU and FEU, though they had the fourth spot last year as being real threats. You even said it wouldn't surprise you if they finish in the top two. Let's talk about UP. Let's talk about LaSalle then. Now that I have your thoughts on FEU, what's your take on the limited, obviously, you know, crack in the window that you've seen? It's a preseason on what LaSalle is bringing to season 85 and what UP is bringing to season 85.
On paper, they're monsters. You know, LaSalle is going to be, you know, in your face the time you walk out of the locker room. Mm. They're going to be pressuring. They have a frightening front line, to be perfectly honest. The best I've seen in the UAAP in my time here. They're going to be able to rebound the ball. Kevin Kimbaugh is an addition of putting a real brain on the front line rather than at the guard spot. And they're going to have very good guards as well. But Kevin plays the game at a very high level of IQ. Mike Phillips is the best offensive rebounder that I've seen in the league. And I think Ange Kwame has had that role for, you know, however long he's played. But I think Mike is certainly going to, you know, give him a run for his money and showed last year as a rookie, an incredible nose for the ball, incredible toughness. Jump over to UP. They're the defending champions, and they return almost intact. I guess CJ is out again, and Richie is out, but they have such good wings, you know, that played good minutes for them last year. And then you get to their front line with, you know, Carl Tamayo and Diouf, and you know, they're just rocking with talent and. Obviously, you've got these two guards, you know, and more than two guards, but, you know, Kagalanan and Abajano are just a nightmare for your guard because they're great, great defenders. And, you know, that bald-headed guy sitting at the end of the bench, you know, he's a problem too. He's a real problem and, you know, such a quiet, unassuming guy. But, you know, Goldman is the gold standard for coaching. And, you know, what are you going to do with those two teams? You know, you're going to be in for the fight of your life. And I don't have any compunction, and they can call me anything they want. They can say, oh, he's playing mind games. They can, you know, do whatever they want. But we are clearly the underdogs compared to those two teams. And kind of like wearing that mantle again. It's a little bit easier to get the kids motivated and fired up, but it's true. You know, getting one of those scalps this year is a huge win for your program. So, I mean, people have been putting a target on our back for, you know, several years now. So let me be stepping up right here in your audience, in front of the whole UAAP audience, and saying, I'm slapping a target on the back of LaSalle and UP. That is as big and as bright as I can possibly make it. You know, these two teams are going to be up at the top of this league, and they're going to be really tough to beat. So anybody that can get their scalp, it's going to be a great day for you. And I include the Blue Eagles in that group.
I'm laughing because I'm so tempted to share a secret that you told me. And I know it's a secret because you put your arm around me and you said, hey, Nico, can I tell you a secret? And I know you have great trust in me. I don't want to break that trust, but I feel like this is a secret I can share. So here's the secret. Here's the secret Tab Baldwin told me. A couple of years ago, before the pandemic, we were together. You put your arm around me and said, Nico, can I tell you a secret? And I go, what's the secret, coach? And you're like, I don't like coaching teams that are favored. And then you also said, I hate it that my players are hearing from everyone that they're favored. I think you were trying to send a message to me because I think I just did a game of yours like 2 days before that, and I said that you guys were favorite, and you were like, I hate it. And then you said, What I want the most is to coach an underdog team again, which is what we had when we played Mbala. Now you have it, coach. Now you have it again. Now you're back in that seat. You don't mind me sharing that secret, right? Because you pretty much said it.
You're forever off my secret list. but you're 100% correct. And I think, you know, this is I think my 41st year of coaching. If you look back at my career all the way back, the national teams I've coached, every single one of them has been an underdog. Teams I coached in Greece and Turkey and Romania, they were all underdogs in their leagues. Teams that I coached in New Zealand early on were underdogs. They became favorites later on. Even when I took over Ateneo, we were underdogs to LaSalle. And I wear that mantle much more comfortably than I do being a favorite. And, you know, people always say that I'm BSing when I'm, you know, speaking to the media when Ateneo was having its good run. And they're saying I'm always trying to play down our chances, because that's me. That's who I am. That's how I feel comfortable. And, you know, when you're coaching a team that they have some swag and some bravado and they think they're all that, I'm not comfortable at all. So right now, you know, I got a little bit of saliva in my mouth. I feel kind of good. You know, I feel like you know, I have a boxer's chance, you know, to throw knockout punches that aren't expected, and that's something I love.
Why is it that at the end of this, I suddenly feel like you're now coaching a much more dangerous team than if you had just come in here and said, yeah, no, we're just as good as we've always been. I'm excited. I'm excited for season 85. I'm excited to see you coach an underdog team again. And I'm excited for those teams that you're ranking above you to prove that they do belong above you and maximize their talents. As a parting shot, as a last bit, I asked Coach Nash this. You had alluded to it earlier already. The UAAP has a decades and decades and decades long tradition of coaches being accused of, just as you said, underplaying their chances and downplaying their expectations of their team. So that's something I don't ever expect out of you, because if anything, as your friend, I would tell you, you're a little too honest. But in this case, you know, I'll bank on that honesty. What's your expectation of the Blue Eagles? Not your expectation of perfection, but what does success look like to you in season 85?
Well, I think, you know, in the back of our minds, irrespective of what we said or what we felt, in the back of our minds in season 83 and season 84, we knew, we felt we should win every game. Mm. I don't feel like that's a realistic expectation now. And it's not a question of saying that we're going to lose to UP or we're going to lose to LaSalle. It's a question of saying that this team has to grow and mature and become a winner. It doesn't automatically, like I said, when we won championships and the next team, I never called them defending champions because they weren't the same team.
Right.
They didn't have the right to call themselves that, in my opinion. Well, this team, you know, only has to prove itself. It has no track record to be able to go out on the court and say, historically speaking, you know, we have an advantage in this game. We should win this game. Now, as the season progresses, you might find yourself in a position to say that, and you might not. But right now, today, looking ahead, I don't see this team as a team that runs the table. I don't see this team as a team that other teams, once we get playing, are going to say they're the favorite. That's the team we have to watch out for. Nonetheless, I do expect our team to be a dangerous team. I do expect them to approach every game with a ferocity and with a confidence that we play the way that we are capable of playing. We can and we should win. But those are just words. The reality is going to be played out in a very, very exciting season 85 UAAP season. And I'm privileged again and excited again to be a part of it. And let's get it on.
there's no better way to end it than that. Let's get it on. It's going to be a hell of a season. I'm so excited for it. I can't wait to watch your team. I can't wait to watch you coach, watch the rest of these very talented coaches and their programs. Going to be a great year. I wish your team health and the best of luck. And I can't wait to see you at the games. Thanks for making time, Coach.
Thanks, Nico. It's great to be with you again. God bless all your audience, and may they all be well.
Thanks to Coach Tab. Thanks to Ryan Alba once again. Make sure you search him on Twitter. It is great stuff, the things that he puts out, and it's going to get even better with the UAAP coming up. No pressure. No pressure or anything, Ryan. Thanks for listening to the preview pod. We'll do another UAP check-in with Ryan, hopefully other special guests here on the podcast as the season goes on. We appreciate you guys subscribing, liking, and sharing this to all of your friends. Happy UAP, guys. We'll see you guys soon. Bye-bye.
I want a million lives. Yeah. I want a billion profits when all that I got is a villainous mind. I keep a real in the pocket while you hear the venomous lies. I do not speak like a prophet because I got a million styles. Let's see what's really inside. Pulling over in the whip. Flying out another...